It's a bonus episode. We're talking Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. Hit it. I'm your host, Jerry D, with another episode of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s. Toys, movies, specials, music, and fads. If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s, we got it covered. Now, joining me is a Totally Rad Christmas all-star. It's film critic, author, and podcaster, Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, how's it going?
It's great, Jerry. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. It's been way too long. I think the last time we talked was the one with Jacqueline Smith.
Oh, right. Yes. The Night They Saved Christmas.
The Night They Saved Christmas. That's what it was. I couldn't think of the name. Yeah. So it's been a while. And I have actually been meaning to ask you back on because there was a couple of 80s things that I do want to made for TV movies that I want to talk to you about. But awesome. When you emailed me, this was perfect because I have your first edition. And now we're here to talk about your second edition of your book. Before we do that, so just this is something I do as kind of a surprise to all my guests, but just like Carol Kane did to Bill Murray in Scrooged, I want you to hit me with the toaster. So I'm going to ask you some questions and I want you to hit me with the first answer you can think of. Okay. Don't have to think too hard about it. All right. Let's say that you're making Home Alone with Muppets. which Muppet would you cast or which Muppets would you cast as Marvin Harry?
Oh, good one. I mean, maybe. I don't know. See, I like Big Angry Carl too much, and I think there's more to him than just being angry. So right. That might be too obvious a choice. Maybe Uncle Dudley and Pepe. How about that?
Okay. I like that. That's inspired. I was struggling with it, honestly. So usually I just ask the questions and don't have to think about it, but I was trying to think about it this time, and I really had nothing. All right. What would you title a Hallmark movie starring Billy and Kate from Gremlins?
A very splooshy Christmas.
Okay. That works for me. You've done your fair share of Hallmark movies, that's for sure. And finally, which 80s Christmas movie character would you want to spend the holidays with?
Oh, gosh, 80s movie. I always think of the 80s as such a, I know this is like your focus, but for me, it's like it's a bit of a hiccup decade there. But I would say Elliot Loudermilk from Scrooge. How about that?
I mean, in the end, it works out for him, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. He needs a little boost.
That's right. Well, that's just a way for our listeners to get to know you a little bit better. So thank you for that.
Sure.
Now, we're here to talk about the second edition of your book, you know, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. So, you know, I have the first one. I really enjoy it. It's a nice like reference book, but there's also some really cool little tidbits and fun facts in there as well. But first of all, how did you get into like journalism and film critiquing and things like that in general? Like what brought you to this biz?
Yeah, you know, what I always say is that you become a film critic when you don't have a plan B. I was pretty much from the moment I started reading, I was reading the movie listings in the paper. And so I was always just kind of obsessed with the idea of movies even before I was really even going to see them on a regular basis. And, you know, I have to remind folks, I grew up in ye olden times where we didn't have cable TV yet or VCRs. And so it was pretty much stuff that randomly popped up on television or you had to go to a theater to see it. And then sometime when I was around 8 years old, I think, when Siskel and Ebert came on the air, and it was sort of like, oh, wait, that's a job? You can do that? And that's, you know, and so pretty much since then, I knew that was what I wanted to do with my life. So, yeah, I wrote reviews for my high school paper. I wrote reviews for my college paper and basically just sort of painted myself into a corner where I wasn't really marketable as anything else.
I know how that goes. Yeah. For the longest time, I was just just a musician, you know, and it was hard to break out of that. So,
You know, sometimes your avocation becomes your vocation, and then what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, that's right. You got to capitalize at that point. So you always knew you kind of had this thing for movies, but like, when did you like really realize you had like an affinity for Christmas movies in particular? Like, when did that strike?
Well, it kind of grew out of, I've always loved Christmas. I'm the youngest of seven kids, big family, big, you know, and also I'm kind of the, what they call the change of life baby. Like there's 5 years between me and my next sibling. So for me as a kid, Christmas meant everybody came home, you know, because they were off to college or whatever. Yeah. And so, you know, and my parents always put on a very big, you know, the food and the gifts and the tree and the whole thing. So I've always been somebody who loved Christmas. And when I started working as a journalist, invariably November, December would roll around and some editor would be like, come up with a list of like Christmas movies that people don't think of as Christmas movies or Christmas horror movies or that right. kind of thing. Right. And eventually I wrote enough of those where I thought, well, maybe there is a book in this. Maybe there's this idea of that Christmas movies go beyond, you know, the obvious sort of It's a Wonderful Life, Elf, A Miracle on 34th Street kind of choices, you know. And it also kind of paralleled with the fact that when I was a kid, we had like five Christmas albums in my house. So it was, you know, Bing, Dean Martin, you know, Perry Como, the Boston Pops. Like there weren't Andy Williams.
Maybe Frank Sinatra somewhere in there.
Oh, no, please, yeah. We didn't even have Frank. Like, we had these five and that was it.
That was okay. Wow.
And again, this is pre-internet. So it wasn't really until I became an adult and started sort of trolling record stores on my own for this stuff. And then, of course, going online that you find out like, oh, Ella Fitzgerald or June Christie or the Ray Conniff singers, like all this other stuff
right.
that was very great Christmas stuff that just wasn't part of my repertoire growing up because I was limited to what we had in the house. And I think maybe a lot of people, again, maybe less so now in the internet era, but earlier, you know, your family would be like, oh, well, every year we watch, you know, It's a Wonderful Life, or every year we watch White Christmas. But there's all these other films out there that maybe you just missed and didn't know about or didn't even know were Christmas movies. And so that was kind of the idea behind the book of like, look at all of these films, very, you know, ranging all of these categories and genres, and they all fit loosely or less loosely into the Christmas category.
Yeah, and there really are a lot of Christmas movies out there. And while you don't list all of them, because I think that would almost be a possibility at this point, you do list quite a menagerie of different genres and everything. I mean, each chapter you focus on 10 to 20, and then you have extras of like, you can also check these out. So I really enjoy that because it's very thorough.
Thank you.
But yes, I mean, like you could have a whole chapter just on Hallmark movies if you wanted, you know.
I wrote a book about Hallmark movies.
Exactly. Yes, you
with
did.
The Hallmark guys. It came out a couple of years ago called I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies. Yeah, Hallmark is its own crazy beast, which now every year is going to give us between 40 to 50 new titles. So good luck keeping up with that.
Yeah.
That alone is a full-time job. Like Deck the Hallmark, those guys have so much work to do during the holiday season that we, during the rest of the year, do like a weekly thing where we just review, like we're in the process right now of reviewing all these other 2024 movies that aired on, like, you know, Amazon or BET right. or, you know, all these different services that they just couldn't get to, you know. So, Hallmark will definitely like eat up your life if you let it.
there was a few years where I was determined to watch every single new release. Mm. And I managed it for like two, maybe 3 years. And after that, I thought, I just can't anymore. And now I work at a Christmas store, so it's very hard to do anything really during the season.
No, I say, but I think that's part of the defense of like, for people who think it's weird when people like us are enjoying Christmas media at other times of the year. It's like, there's just too much.
Yeah.
There's too much to sandwich between Thanksgiving and Christmas. If I want to see all these movies and hear all these songs, I need the whole year to do it.
Exactly. And then especially if it's like your favorite. So there's some that I have to watch every year mm-hmm. or it just doesn't feel like Christmas. And you actually have a section on that of like classics as well. But it doesn't feel like Christmas if I don't see these. And
of course,
sometimes, unfortunately, because of my job or because of everything that goes on during Christmas season, it has to happen in January or February, you know.
Yeah.
So, So the genesis of your book was you had all these ideas essentially, and you know, you knew had all these lists floating around, and you decided just to put them down on the paper. Like, what was
in a nutshell, yes. I mean, what happened specifically, what happened was I was at a film festival party for a festival I used to work at in Dallas called USA Film Festival. And I met the man who would become my literary agent, Eric Myers. And I had done a book previous to that. And he asked me if I had any other ideas. I said, well, I have this thing kind of rattling around in my head about, you know, Christmas movies. And he goes, oh, that's a really fun idea, because he goes, film books don't really sell anymore, but holiday books do.
Oh,
so nice. Like, okay, I'll give it a shot. So he said, look, you know, and I gave him a breakdown of the categories and stuff. And he goes, well, do the kids chapter first, because I think that's going to be a real selling point for publishers, because parents are always looking for, you know, stuff to show their children. Yada, yada. So that was the first chapter I sat down and wrote, and he shopped it around and nobody bit. And then a year later, he said, well, the one publisher I didn't hear from is interested. And so we went from there. But it was just kind of a happenstance of somebody kind of encouraging me to follow through on it. And then just sort of figuring out, like, yeah, what's the smartest way to divvy these up? And I just figured categories would be good, because, you know, maybe you're a fan of horror, maybe you like a good tearjerker, maybe you like a fun bad movie, you know, and you can just go right to what you're looking for.
Right. And you even mentioned, so in the preface, you talk about Christmas podcasts as well. And you talk about the subgenres that have developed in that. You know, we have festive foreign film fans,
right,
that only do foreign films. We have Holly Jolly Xmasu that only does like Japanese Christmas music. I mean, just all sorts of things. But it's very
similar.
None
of this was around in 2010, mind you. Like, exactly. When I did the first edition, this was a very different landscape.
Right. Now, though, it really does reflect the state of Christmas movies in general, where we have action Christmas movies and you know, dramas and comedies and all sorts of subgenres, like supernatural horror.
Oh, Christmas so movies. Many horror movies. I can't keep up with those either, you know.
Right. Right. Shudder has like several each year as well, that I just, you know, that comes to a point where it's like, I don't need to watch that. I've seen it.
And the weird thing is, not only are there like as seemingly as many new horror movies every year as there are new Hallmark movies, there's a real crossover between those worlds. Like, a lot of people who come up through low budget horror wind up becoming Hallmark directors, because they're really good at, like, you know, delivering quick and on a budget and sort of being very forward about, you know, whatever the genre is, either whether it's frightening you or like making sure you see all the cookies being made. Like, they really the same skill set is required for both. So you see people who, like, you know, Ron Oliver, who's considered like one of the big Hallmark directors, got to start with movies like, you know, Hello Mary Lou, Prom Night 2, you know, and there are a lot of other examples of that.
It's not a good movie, but it's a great movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's terrible, but it's fun.
But it's effective.
That's right. So was it difficult separating these movies into categories? Because some seem like they could go into many different category slots.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's the writer's prerogative, you know.
Yeah, gotcha.
Like, gotcha. I could very, yeah, there are any number of films that sort of straddle things, like, well, it's a kids movie but it's also a comedy, or like, it's, you know, it's a classic but it's also a, you know, film aimed at older audiences. Like, that was very much just like me and my whims, you know.
Gotcha.
But I figure as long as they're in there somewhere, that's what counts the most, you know.
I totally agree. Like for me, Home Alone would be in the classic section. You have it in the kids section, and that's fine too. I mean, that's perfectly fine, because really, first and foremost, it's a kids movie, right?
Yes. I'll tell you, my deep dark secret, I never saw Home Alone until I sat down to write that kids chapter.
Really?
To pitch the book. Yeah, because I was 23 in 1990, so I had, that ship had sailed, and it just wasn't a movie that I felt like I needed to go see. And then as the years passed, I was like, well, I know the kids love it, but finally, you know, when I, sometime around 2008, I actually watched it for the first time. I was like, I see the charm here. I see why, you know, it has shaped this generation behind me, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of my top three favorite Christmas movies.
No, I get it.
Because it's, you know, I was 10, so it was very silly. And but I felt like, hey, I could defend my house if I had to.
Yeah, it's very smart about that. Like, it's smart about making the kid a very sort of ingenious, you know, like, you know, hero who can make things happen. But it also kind of plays on the fantasy of like, oh, I've got the whole place to myself. I can eat what I want. I can jump on all the beds. Like, it's, you know, it's all my thing. And then also, and on top of all that, it fits into this A Christmas Carol, It's a Wonderful Life tradition of the, oh, I'm seeing what this other life would look like and I don't like it, and I'm going to now appreciate, you know, the my situation because I've had a glimpse of what it would look like if it were different, you know?
Yeah. It really works. And there's a lot of movies like that. I mean, so, you know, we're talking about all these chapters. I'm just going to read them out real quick. I love how you add all like the little catchphrases, or, you know, to each one. Sometimes they're like quotes from a movie. Sometimes it's like a quote from a song. It's just a nice little, just a little catchphrase, I guess. So, yeah, you're right. It starts off with the kids jingle belling, which is the movies for kids, like you said. It goes nestled all snug in their beds, movies for grownups, which is that's a nice natural transition, kids to grownups. Yeah. Then like a bowl, like a bowl full of jelly. It's classic. Christmas comedies. Then we have A Blue, Blue, Blue Christmas. That's like my favorite out of all these out of all these titles. That's the best one. It's a holiday tearjerkers, putting the heist back in Christmas, so like crime and action extravaganza, which I was very grateful. You did list several of like my favorite, my all-time favorite Christmas action movies in there. So you even talk about Invasion USA, which I thought was, you know, that's like super dumb, super turn your brain off and just enjoy the action and the Chuck Norris of it all.
You can't think about it for a second. But and that was one I only recently came around to. I didn't know about it when I wrote the first edition, but I've since caught up with it. I was like, oh, this has to be in there because the use of Christmas on top of everything else is just so bonkers.
Yeah, if you took, it's one of those where if you took Christmas out, it really wouldn't have made any difference.
No, not at all, but... It's just if you're gonna blow up a mall, it better be a mall that's
might as well have a Christmas Santa. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Trancers, you talk about Trancers, which is another one I love. You know, there's just all these like quintessential 80s action flicks that are, you know, no one really thinks about as Christmas movies, but typically they are set at Christmas time.
Absolutely. And you know, I think there are people who have. And again, it's like I never really want to wade in too hard on the is Die Hard a Christmas movie debate, because ultimately it's up to everyone to decide. I mean, Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Let's be very clear about that. But if you have issue with that, you know, that's on you, and you get to decide for yourself what is and isn't a Christmas movie. And so, yeah, there are a lot of movies in here people would point to go, well, I mean, it's set at Christmas, or there's, you know, it's all decorated for Christmas. But is it a Christmas movie? And I'm like, well, that depends on what your
consider.
Standards are.
Right,
you know,
right.
Does it have to have a moment where somebody sits down and talks about the birth of Christ, or does it have to have a moment where like a tree is lit and, you know, family is reaffirmed? I don't know. I mean, like everybody has their own take on it. I would argue that Die Hard has all that stuff in it. I mean, maybe not the Christ part, but you know, it is about an estranged couple, you know, renewing their faith in each other at the holidays, you know, and the woman is named Holly. So come on.
Yeah, it is the official position of Totally Rad Christmas that it is a Christmas movie. So.
Thank you. And so is Eyes Wide Shut.
That's right. And Lethal Weapon.
Yes.
So, you know. But yeah, you have There'll Be Scary Ghost Stories. Of course, that's the holiday horror section. Scroogeapalooza, which is all about A Christmas Carol. And then Lumps of Coal in Your Cinema Stocking. So that's like just the worst of the worst Christmas movies, which I love that you threw that in. You had to throw that in because you can't talk about Christmas movies without talking about bad Christmas movies.
Yeah, and some of those are really fun to watch. Like they wind up becoming part of my annual tradition anyway, you know.
Yeah, some of them aren't so hot though. Like One Magic Christmas, I can't.
No.
And then finally, you have the last chapter, Christmas Classics, which you label just like the ones I used to know. So, it's a nice list of categories that you have there, and I love the whole structure of it because you kind of give a little intro, and then you just start with the movies and you really highlight, like I said, between 10 and 20, depending on the chapter, just movies that really fit the category that are well done versions of what it is that you're exactly talking about in these categories. And then you give a little synopsis, you talk a little bit about how it's made, and then you give some fun trivia facts after that. So it's really cool.
Yeah, thank you. That just seemed like, you know, I was trying to think like, you know, how do I talk people into these movies, you know? Yeah. And so, you know, I give a plot synopsis where I'm not giving away too much, but I'm trying to sort of like give you like enough taste to make you go, to what happens? Yeah. And then I think, you know, the background for films is very often really interesting in terms of like, how did they get made and mm-hmm. what were the details involved and what inspired it and what almost, you know, destroyed the whole project, you know? I'm a big fan of a writer named Danny Peary, who wrote cult movies 1, 2, and 3, the three books that came out in the 80s. And then a larger or a more comprehensive book called Guide for the Film Fanatic. And he has a very conversational way of talking about movies that really just kind of makes you want to see this stuff. And so he's somebody that I kind of think of as a role model in terms of like, how do I talk about these movies in a way that, you know, I'm not trying to be academic here. This is really just trying to recommend movies and be like, hey, I saw this and I think you might like it, you know? And so that just sort of seemed to organically be the way to do it.
Yeah, it's nice because it is a reference book. I mean, but also it's not. You know, it's very much something you can just pick up and read. It's a nice light read. It's not going to bore you with technical details, but at the same time, it gives you enough info that you're like, oh, well, that's interesting. And it just makes you, I mean, you're right. It really does entice you to go check it out. So, I really enjoyed that. Now, on these titles, I was talking about these titles, like, did you go through a lot of iterations of them before you decided on these, or did you...
They were kind of all the tip of my tongue. Yeah. Should I have dug into It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year twice? I don't know, but I did, you know.
That's okay.
But yeah, no, I don't know. I've spent enough time in journalism where I've gotten very good at like the punchy caption or, you know, like little tagline.
Yeah.
So I was just trying to kind of like, you know, I knew the explanation for each chapter, but I also wanted to give it a little punchy, you know, one-liner. And so that was the idea there.
Okay. All right. So, you know, we talked about the movies. They all have, like, their production credits, a little synopsis, your own little mini, I don't want to say critique, but a little bit of that. And,
sure.
You know, some fun facts, like I said. I mean, it is rather complete it really is complete for just about each listing that you give. So when you decided on this format, were you inspired by anything in particular? Like you were talking about that author,
Danny Peary.
Danny Peary, or was this just something that came to you off the top?
That was part of it. And I wrote a book years ago that's long out of print called 101 Must-See Movies for Gay Men. And that's, I also sort of followed that same kind of premise. And so, I think, I do give myself about a paragraph to kind of give some opinion on the film, just because I don't want it to be this sort of dry, like, you know, here's a complete list of all of the films that fit into this category.
That's,
you know?
Right.
This is very much a subjective choice. You know, I think people will be like, oh, you didn't talk about da da da, or you only mentioned it briefly. And yeah, it's because it's me. It's because I wrote it. And the thing about like whenever you see lists in a magazine somewhere, when Rolling Stone picks the 100 greatest whatever, or, you know, if it's a film thing, whatever, here's a little insider tip: those lists exist to drive people up the wall. they exist so that you'll be like, I can't believe you left out yada yada, or I can't believe you included blah blah, or I can't believe you put this that high on the list or that low on the list. Like, it's just there to make people mad. So, you know, I'm not trying to make people mad, but it is very much like, here's my thoughts about Christmas movies and ones I think you should see. And then there's ones that I've thrown in where like, I kind of have to mention this one, even though I'm not necessarily the world's biggest fan of it. But yeah, so it just kind of comes out of this subjective place of pointing people to stuff. One big change from the last time was, you know, I reviewed almost everything that I looked at for the book when I was writing it in 2009. I was on discs. I was getting like discs in the mail from Netflix and from like, there was used to be a company called Green Cine that would do that. And I was just renting, you know, all these things and sending it back and going, you know, there were still video stores in LA and now there's like a handful, but, but like there was still Rocket Video on La Brea that I could go to. And that was great because, you know, we have lost the curation powers of video store clerks, and I think we are all the sadder for it as a society, because they started noticing that it was July and I'm leaving with these armfuls of Christmas movies, and finally somebody asked me, what are you working on? And I told them, and they started pointing me to stuff that I didn't know about. Yeah. Like I found out about The Silent Partner thanks to those guys, you know.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, so that was very helpful. And then this time around it was pretty much all streaming. You know, I think I maybe rented one or two discs from Scarecrow Video in Seattle, which also has a by mail rental service now that Netflix took theirs away. But yeah, now it's a lot of streaming, and actually quite a few films in the book debuted on streamers, like they were Netflix movies or you know Hulu movies or whatever.
Right Yeah, like Jingle Jangle or things of
Let It Snow, and even Happiest Season, which was supposed to be a theatrical release, but then because of COVID. Wound up premiering on Hulu, you know.
Right Real quick, I have to know, because I did read about it in your book, but your thoughts on Violent Night?
I love Violent Night.
I did too. Yeah,
I think it's brilliant. It is funny. It's exciting. It because you know, you look at the premise and think, okay, so it's Die Hard, but Santa is John McClane. But yeah. They make that right. work, you know. And it just goes to show you can never judge a movie by like the trailer or even just the premise of it, you know. I think it is. It's consistently, you know, just it's thrilling and it's hilarious. There's, you know, out of nowhere, you suddenly get this really sweet relationship between Santa and the little girl, you know, which is right. very nice. But then the little girl also comes up with booby traps that make, you know,
she totally
Kevin McAllister look yeah. like Jigsaw, you know. So yeah, it's doing a lot of things, and we've got a sequel coming. Fingers crossed that it's as good.
I hope so. Yeah, it's always hard. Sequels are.
Yeah.
Yeah, you never can tell. We talked about the honorable mentions, and they're, you know, like you do have lists of them behind, you know, at the end of each chapter. Of course, you can't include everything because that's just a gargantuan undertaking there. But was it hard to whittle down like your honorable mentions or even just the main ones? Was it hard to keep those concise? Were there spatial limitations that you had to adhere to?
Well, here's what was tricky. Like when I first pitched this to my publisher, we had talked about doing a sequel, but then they were like, well, you can't really do a sequel because you can't have a book about Christmas movies and not have the classics, you know, which are all the, you know, in the first book. I was like, okay, I see your point. It can't just be an add-on.
Right.
So they said like, do make it an updated edition, but it has to be about the same size as the first edition.
Oh no.
So that meant taking a lot of the movies that I had written like full entries for, like, boom, you are now two sentences. I think the plus side of that is if you already have the book, you will find a lot in this book that is new and added, and it's a whole other thing. And if you don't have the first one, this book gives you a pretty comprehensive thing of both books. But you could still pick up the old one and find out, you know, if you want to read more about like Millions or, you know, other movies that I had to shrink down for this one, they're in there, you know. So, that was definitely, you know, if you work on the internet, you know, time and space means nothing. But when you're actually printing on pages and they have to be bound together, you know, the limitations come into play.
Well, you do have a nice long entry on the best Christmas pageant ever that was released, you know, just last year, I believe.
Just last year,
yeah. So, so it's again really nice, but you're able to get into it as opposed to just adding like a little paragraph. So, yeah, I did appreciate some of the longer the longer bits that you had on the new material. Yeah. I accidentally. Darn it, where'd it go? There it is. I accidentally closed it. Don't worry, I'll cut all that out. Okay. Sorry. That's the best part about editing is you just...
Tell me about it.
Yeah. Your second edition releasing soon. What were some of the additions and changes that you made in particular? Like, give us some examples of some of the things that we'd find, you know, in this new event. Version.
Well, I you know, obviously, like you mentioned, best Christmas pageant ever. I had a lot of films that had come out since 2010 that I was finally able to go back and put in stuff like Arthur Christmas.
Arthur Christmas, right.
A lot of those Netflix movies, Klaus and Christmas Chronicles 1 and 2 and Holiday and Jingle Jangle, like those are all came out in those ensuing years. Violent Night and you know, Better Watch Out. But then also I had the opportunity to get into some classic films that I just didn't have in the first one. Like, I didn't really know about Invasion USA, like we talked about. I didn't know right. about this amazing noir film called Blast of Silence that was shot, you know, one of those great low-budget movies shot without permits, so you really get a feel for what things look like.
Right, guerrilla filmmaking, yeah.
Yes, exactly. You know, they're just in a car with a camera and go, you know. So if you want to see what New York looked like at Christmas time 1962, like this movie is almost an anthropological exercise, but it's also a really cool noir. You know, Auntie Mame, I did not write about the first time, and I felt like that was a real absence in the book, so I was able to put that back in. And then other things just got kind of updated along the way. There were, I'm trying to think, like, what was I like, okay, for example, the Mexican Santa Claus, which I discovered, like a lot of people, through Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Right.
You know, it's still in my worst movies chapter, but I have developed a grudging respect for that movie over the years. It's so bananas that it is one that I watch every year now, and it's almost like an accidental art film in a way, you know. I think it does approach a kind of kiddie surrealism that maybe I was a little hard on it the first time. So I dialed that back down a bit. The ongoing Die Hard debate is hilarious because when I was working on this book the first time, circa 2008, 2009, I would talk to people about, you know, what their traditional Christmas movies and their favorites. And so often somebody would end the conversation saying, well, I mean, it's not technically a Christmas movie, but in our house, we watch Die Hard every year.
Right.
You know, like it's this secret discovery that only they had made. And then that gave way to the, you know, the current ruckus on the internet about this topic. So yeah, I mean, things just evolve and change. Right. But yeah, definitely, like the preponderance of streaming is a new thing, and the preponderance of media about Christmas media. You know, I mean,
yes, there are, actually,
none of these podcasts existed when I published the book. I mean, I think the first one I encountered was, I guess, Tis the Podcast, and that was like, what, 2012, 2013 or something. So, you know,
I think they started in 2017, actually.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Christmas Past, I think, was before them with the,
yeah, there was the Christmas Stocking.
That Christmas was sort Stocking of, was probably was, the first one. Yeah.
That was the first big daddy of them. Yeah. But now it's nuts. I mean, like, I'm obsessed with an Australian podcast called Christmas Potting.
Oh yeah. You know, yeah, I know Christmas Potting.
Yeah. So it's just, it's everywhere. And, but the, you know, and I talk about this in the book, William Bibbiani was like, oh, we should do a podcast about Christmas movies. And I said, that's ridiculous. Who would tune into that year round? And of course, shows you what I know, because you know, you've got all these other shows.
There's so many now.
Going through the year, and good on them. You know, I wish I had gotten in on the ground floor when I had the chance.
Yeah. If I could have invested in Google, I totally would have.
Yes, my doing a Christmas movie podcast would absolutely be that level of lucrative. I
mean, to some of us, you know, we think, but no, I mean, yeah, I would have liked to have heard that, But I do like how you throw in some of these movies that we don't necessarily associate with Christmas, like Brazil. You talk about Brazil in there as well, which is, you know, I mean, Terry Gilliam, like, I don't know, out of his mind, but it was awesome. So
yeah, no, it's his masterwork for sure. And it's funny because I think a lot of these movies, people will raise an eyebrow at the thought of it, but go back and look at it again. I mean, there is so much Christmas imagery throughout Brazil. Mm-hmm. Eyes Wide Shut, like every scene has twinkle lights, or Nicole Kidman is wrapping a present or there's like a tree. There's like Kubrick is hitting it as hard as Hallmark would. You know, you watch a Hallmark movie and no one's office is not like decorated to the gills. You know, no one's kitchen doesn't have like garland hanging over the stove, which seems to me like a fire hazard.
Fire hazard. Yeah.
But I mean, like, there's so much Christmas in Eyes Wide Shut. It's insane. Okay, except the orgy scene, but you know,
well,
you've got to draw the line somewhere. But so, yeah,
nobody wants little pine needles all the way.
No,
the floor,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's very inconvenient. But if you look at it with that perspective, you're like, oh my God, it's everywhere. And you know, as we know, Kubrick does nothing by accident. So,
no, I mean, not at all. But you're right, and I think it is just Oh, hold on. Sorry. Getting a voicemail. I think it is just like the heavy subject matter that makes us forget that it's Christmas, you know?
Yeah.
And that tends to happen in a lot of these. Same thing with Die Hard. It's all the action that makes us like not worry about Christmas. You know, we just want to know if he's going to save the hostages, you know?
No. I mean, I this summer I got to see Die Hard in 70mm for the first time. And it was the first time I'd seen it projected in I don't know how long. And it was still so thrilling. Like I have seen that movie so many times. I know exactly what's going to happen. And I'm still like, you know, when he's hanging off that elevator shaft, I can't breathe, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my palms get all sweaty every time at that time because it's just like, I know I wouldn't make that.
Oh, yeah, forget it.
Again, obviously there's, like you said, just a preponderance of all this new media, streaming, everything like that. So why these particular changes? Like, why did you choose, why is Candy Cane Lane just a couple of sentences, whereas, you know, some of these others are longer?
Yeah, again, it's subjective, you know. Like I liked Candy Cane Lane. I liked Red One more than a lot of people, but I didn't feel like they necessarily needed to be dug into that much. But I thought like Best Christmas Pageant Ever really struck me as like, you know, when we talk about family movies, that's usually code for entertaining movies for kids that parents will endure. You know,
totally.
And for me, like Best Christmas Pageant Ever feels like a rare movie that's like a genuine four quadrant entire family will find something entertaining about this movie. You know, I wanted to dig into a film that came out last year called Christmas Eve in Miller's Point.
Oh, yeah.
That was, you know, it's kind of an art house film. It was released by IFC. It premiered at the Cannes Film Festival, but I think is so great. And I think it's a movie that people didn't know about, and I have this suspicion that when they released it last year, people who wanted to see a movie about Christmas were not down for what this movie was doing, and people who would love an art house movie were put off by the fact that Christmas was in the title, and they assumed, oh, it's going to be some Hallmark nonsense or whatever. But it is like a wonderfully evocative film about a family gathering for what's going to be the last Christmas that they all share together in this sort of family home on Long Island. And there's almost, you know, it, as I say, it's one of those movies where you say, oh, where nothing happens, but everything happens.
Right.
And it's just, it's all about each
how Seinfeldian.
Yeah, like what, you know, you can see these people having these moments that you know they're going to remember and think about when they think about Christmas or whatever, like for the rest of their lives. And it captures this mood of what a big boisterous family Christmas is like, and different people under one roof, and maybe they get along and maybe they don't, and maybe the food is good, maybe it's terrible, and there's the people we love and the people we tolerate, and it was so overpoweringly familiar to me, and not in a like a trite way, but in a I've lived this way.
I think
it's so beautifully done. So I really wanted to get into that one. And by the way, the folks behind that film had a movie out this year called Ephus, Ephus, which is about a baseball diamond in New England in the 90s that's about to be torn down for a school, and these two teams meet to have one last baseball game there. And the whole movie is the baseball game. And it's really great. And it's one of my favorite movies this year. So, yeah, Christmas Eve in Miller's Point, Ephus, check those out. They're dynamite.
For sure. I definitely will. But I know what you mean because, you know, I'm like you, I'm from a large Hispanic family. You know, when I was little, I remember everyone, all the aunts and uncles and all the cousins coming to Christmas and having to set up tables and tables and tables outside because we just didn't have enough space in my grandma's little house. And, you know, but there are like folks that you get along with better than others, and some folks that don't get along at all. And, you know, typical large family dynamics. So,
of course,
I do love movies like that. And so I understand why you would choose that. Is there anything you wish you could have added, like to this second edition, like anything that you had to cut for time or that you would have loved to have expanded on?
I mean, you know, I think I would have liked to have kept a lot of more stuff from the first film that I, right. you know, that was where the really hard cuts came in. Like Millions, which I mentioned before, a movie that I love. And I think that not even just that people don't think of it as a Christmas movie, I think people don't remember it. It's a Danny Boyle movie, you know, but it is very much not Trainspotting or, you know, 28 Days Later. It's about these two young boys and their mother's died. It's the first Christmas without her. And they come upon a bag of money that sort of, you know, may or may not change their lives. And it's very funny and sweet and, you know, bittersweet and sad and lovely. And a film that I'm always kind of pushing on people because it is sort of the classic thing of this book of like, you've never heard of this movie, but trust me, I think you're going to love it.
You're going to love it. Right. 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 So you're right. You did an entire book on Hallmark movies.
Yes.
Would you ever try to condense that into a chapter here and then just have like a little disclaimer, you know, for more, go see this book on.
You know, I try to church and state it with those because I feel like the
Have you
Hallmark
seen one? You've seen them all, right?
No, I mean, I think there are better ones and worse ones, like with anything else.
Yeah.
And I could certainly recommend like 5 Hallmark movies that I would say to almost anyone, like, no, really check these out. You might be pleasantly surprised. But I don't know. I feel like they are so their own thing. And they do a specific thing and they have a specific agenda in mind.
Right.
You know, they are movies. This is a TV channel that is owned by a greeting card company, you know. And so even though I think they have in recent years steered away from they're not all exactly the same plot, they do all function in a way of, like I was saying before with Eyes Wide Shut, like there has to be Christmas in every scene, mm-hmm. every house, every office, every store, every whatever. There has to be the tree lighting. There has to be the cookie baking. There has to be the, you know, whatever else that they get in there. And, you know, they are structured in such a way where I call them perfect nursing home television because you can nod off in the middle of one and wake up in the middle of the next one and you know exactly what's going on.
That's totally true.
And that's a feature, not a bug. They've got it down, you know. But yeah, so I kind of think of them as their own separate thing.
They are kind of the greeting cards of movies for sure.
Yeah, in the same way that, you know, you get that card with a beautiful snowy scene on the front,
right.
and you put it on the mantle and you look up at it and go, ah, Christmas.
That snowy
scene. You yep. turn on the Hallmark channel and any given frame of one of these movies is going to make you go, ah, Christmas. And then you go back to folding your laundry, you know.
Right. And you do have a couple of, you do mention some foreign films in here as well.
Yes.
Would you ever do a chapter just on foreign films?
You know, I try not to segregate them in that way. I mean, like, all kudos to Festive Foreign Films. I think they do a great job on that podcast, and they've got a fun idea where they're hopping from country to country to
right.
do the thing. But, you know, I'm of the, you know, as the director of Parasite said when he won his Oscar, like, Americans need to learn how to leap over the 1-inch hurdle of subtitles. So I would prefer to sneak them into different
gotcha.
Chapters than yeah. sort of put them on their own little island, you know?
Yeah, I gotcha. And that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and one of the movies I got to talk about this time was Rare Exports, which came out like yes. the same year my book came out. I remember that Christmas in particular was like, oh man, I just missed this and this.
Right.
You know, and same thing's happening now. Like this year we're getting The Baltimoreans, which I hear is really great, and we're getting Oh What Fun, and you know, next
right.
year we've got Almodovar's Christmas movie, which I'm super pumped about. So, you know, edition 3 is already writing itself, you know.
I love it. So of course this is an 80s show, so I have to ask, like,
sure.
are there any 80s Christmas films that stand out to you, and or well, any lesser known 80s films as well?
I mean, you know, obviously Die Hard is
right,
you know,
right.
the ongoing topic of discussion, and you know, Scrooge is you know, I don't love it 100%, but there are moments in it that I think are right up there with the best ones. It's, you know, it's kind of this weird decade. Like I was saying before, when you were asking about like my favorite 80s character, I don't feel like it was a really strong decade for theatrical Christmas, but I do feel yeah. like it was that moment where like the Scrooge is a ruthless career woman movies started surfacing.
Oh yeah, like a, what is it, a Diva's Christmas Carol?
Yeah, Diva's Christmas Carol. That was, yeah, that was a later, but like Ms. Scrooge and Ms. Ebby Scrooge, with right. Susan Lucci. Like these were all, you know, kind of those were starting to surface around then. There's a I want to say from 80 or 81. There's a TV movie called A Christmas Without Snow that I really love, starring Michael Learned as a widow who moves to San Francisco and gets involved with a church choir that is going to perform Handel's Messiah. And John Houseman plays the sort of strict but, you know, kind-hearted choir master. Coming in to whip these guys into shape. And it's a really lovely movie, and it's got a bunch of side plots and characters that are really cool. The pastor is played by, you know, Farmer Hoggett from Babe, you know, James Cromwell. So, yeah, that's one that I really love. It's unfortunately one of those movies that kind of fell into the public domain, so you can stream it pretty much anywhere, but it's probably going to look like crap.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, yeah. It's worth checking out.
Hasn't been remastered at all. There's a few.
No, I know. Where is my 4K?
Yeah, there. I just saw the other day Christmas Eve from 1986. It was a made-for-TV movie as well.
Oh, right.
It's super sappy.
Is it like Loretta Young?
Loretta Young. That's the one. Yeah. But, you know, it. I got through it. And so,
I think when the Santa Claus hit big in the early 90s, that sort of, and Home Alone obviously,
right,
really kind of prompted a whole new wave of Christmas stuff happening in the 90s and the early aughts. But yeah, the 80s, I could be wrong, but I feel like it's a bit of a downtime.
No, I know what you mean, because really the only, I mean, early 80s we really only get A Christmas Story and Gremlins, if you want to count Gremlins.
Sure.
And then, you know,
Better Off Dead, I'll give you that.
That's right. Fast Times has a little bit of Christmas in it. But, you know, it's like we have those, and then there's kind of not really anything till, again, maybe Die Hard. And then we get Christmas Vacation and Scrooged, you know.
So oh, that's
like,
true. Yeah. At the very end, you do get like,
right at the tail. Yeah.
There's a John Cusack bubble in the middle of The Sure Thing and Better Off Dead, both of which I like quite a bit.
Yeah. But, like, no one thinks of those as Christmas movies. They're more like, you know, movies with a little bit of Christmas in them. But here, you know, we take the Todd Killian from Christmas Clatter Tack, where if it mentions Christmas, if there's like a candy cane in it, it's a Christmas movie. So,
yeah, no, I was on a TV special that was on last year about best Christmas movies ever, and I think it's coming out on Blu-ray this fall.
Nice.
And I at the end of my rant about, like, let's stop arguing about Die Hard, I said, let's start arguing about whether or not Hustlers is a Christmas movie. Because that Jennifer Lopez stripper saga does have an extended Christmas sequence in it with a huge tree and people exchanging gifts.
Well, and I think more and more people are accepting Die Hard now. I mean, there's children's books at Target about it.
Yes.
So it just depends, you know, because I think if you go to Walmart, I think it's still... the movie itself is not like in the Christmas package.
I have the Nakatomi Tower that they released.
Yeah.
And that comes out every year as part of our Christmas decorations. Like, I don't have a Christmas village, but I have a Nakatomi Plaza.
That's cool. That's super cool. Okay. What would you say is your happiest like memory writing this book and doing the second edition?
Gosh, the first edition, I think I was really, I felt like I was most excited. I spent the day at the, which no longer exists in Los Angeles, unfortunately, the Paley Museum. I think they still have one in New York. The Paley Institute is it's a nonprofit research that it's an archive of television. And, you know, they'll do special programs and, you know, show older, you know, programming and bring in guests. But the one they had in Los Angeles, you know, you could go in, walk in off the street and sign up and get a little, you know, carol and you know, request things and look at them. And the two things that I watched there that I felt really excited about getting the books, I didn't think they were getting a lot of love, was first of all was the Truman Capote Christmas Memory. That aired on TV in the late 60s with Geraldine Page, won several Emmys. It's gorgeous. And you can now watch it on YouTube, by the way. So I do recommend that people check that out if they haven't. And then the other one was a movie called Carol for Another Christmas, which I had always heard about, but had never gotten to see because it only aired once in 1964. Yeah. It was written by Rod Serling. It was directed by Joseph L. Mankiewicz, you know, the guy who made All About Eve and Cleopatra. It's this all-star cast, and it's this modern retelling of A Christmas Carol produced by the UN. And it's all about like the Scrooge character coming to discover that isolationism is bad. And so I wrote about that in the book. I was like, yes, this is a thing that happened, you know. And after the book came out, and I'm not saying these two things are correlated, but I'm not saying they're not correlated. TCM started showing Carol for Another Christmas, and it now lives on HBO Max. So whatever role I played in that, I was very excited about.
I think it is because of it, but that's going to be my belief. So
I'll never know for sure. And then in writing the second edition, it was just kind of fun to dig back into it and to have an excuse to be watching this stuff, you know, because I'll watch Christmas movies. What I learned during the first book was like, wait, I can watch Christmas movies in July and the earth will not fall into the sun. But I always feel a little guilty, a little ashamed about it. I can't do it in front of my husband. He's like, I love Christmas, but not now. But doing the second issue is like, an excuse.
I understand. I love Christmas. I would have a tree up all year long if I could, but my wife is like, no, you are not doing that.
Yeah, so somebody's got to keep us in check.
I know. Exactly. Someone's got to be, you know, have a good head on their shoulders around here.
Sense of perspective. Yeah, I get it.
Well, you know, G.I. Joe taught us that knowing is half the battle. What do you think the other half is?
Getting a good night's sleep.
I mean, I think if you're going to write something and do it well, I think that's probably a good idea.
Yeah, whatever your battle is, be well rested.
I like that. I just thought in this case, if no one's half the battle, the other half is just categorizing Christmas movies.
That is the battle.
That's right. Alonzo, this has been a lot of fun.
Thank you, sir.
Very entertaining and enlightening as well. But, you know, tell me about this book that's coming up again. Like, when can they get it? Where can they get it? And anything else you want to plug?
Yeah, thank you. It's the revised and expanded second edition of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. Bloomsbury is releasing it the first week of September. You can pre-order it now. I don't know when this episode drops. Your favorite online bookseller, or give it up for the brick and mortar. You know, walk into your local store, and if they don't have it, ask them why not. But yeah, it's available wherever books are sold. It's also will be available as an ebook. You can hear me in far too many places on the internet. I co-host the podcast Linoleum Knife with my husband Dave White, going on 15 years now on that show. Also Maximum Film, Breakfast All Day with Christy Lemire over on YouTube, and the Deck the Hallmark podcast. And you can read my reviews at thefilmverdict.com.
Right on. And what was the name of that the book with that you did with the Hallmark guys?
That one's called I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies. It's published by Running Press. Also available wherever you find your fine reading materials.
Yeah, and definitely check those out, guys. You're going to want to pick it up. Like I said, the first edition's great, so I'm excited to get the second one for sure.
Thank you, sir.
And so on that note, let me just say thanks again. This was fun. And I'll end it with, we live in a world that can be difficult and challenging, and sometimes, as the song says, we need a little Christmas right this very minute. So check us out on our social media pages, which you can find at linktree.com/totallyradchristmas. And if you're feeling like you're in a Christmas movie, leave us a review on iTunes. It helps us reach more people and spread some rad holiday cheer. And don't forget to check out our merch shop on teepublic.com and our super dope website, totallyradchristmas.com. Merry Christmas to all, and to all a safe night. Later, dudes.